Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
My name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore this week. We are joined in studio by, I'm very excited about this, I must say, returning son of the show, prodigal son, if you will, Claire's finest, it's Dottie O'Droney.
Hey, thank you very much.
First time in Adam's studio.
First time in Adam's studio in the new No Encore era. I haven't been here before, and it's absolutely gorgeous.
I find this wild. Adam doesn't have a microphone this week, but he's
I don't, I can shout, though.
Yeah. You can shout. The classic Adam sound on No Encore. Adam shouting in the background.
Yeah, so Dahi's also here alongside first-time guest, long-time acquaintance, I suppose. We'll get to that. It's the one and only Robert Higgins. Hello, sir.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've listened to it. I'd say first couple of weeks of the show in general.
You've been listening to the show since then?
Yeah, that long.
That's fucking unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's an OG
fan. Hot Press back in the day. Yeah. So
this is the thing. So Dahi and Robert are here today to talk about Lakelands, the brand new film, which is out as of this podcast dropping. It's out in select Irish cinemas. We'll talk all about that later in the show. Talk about the music of it, the making of it. We're going to get into the whole damn thing. And, you know, it's a good occasion for you to be on the show. But yeah, straight away, I guess, Rob, if I may. Do you go by Rob, or is that me being too?
Rob, yeah.
Okay, we're going to do it. We're going to go with Rob. I have in my notes here the very first thing I wrote down when it came to Q&A for Lakelands, which I was going to do later in the show, but we can just do it now. Rob's sordid hot press past.
Unveiled.
I've talked on this show before. People may not be surprised to learn that I once worked for the national magazine of the country, Hot Press. Rob came along during
magazine of record.
They should call themselves that. I think they're like keeping our own safe for rock and roll or something is their insane tagline still. But Rob, you did a stint in Hot Press while I was there. And this would have been, I want to say, 2011, 2012?
2013, I think it was.
Yeah. Even better. Now, I remember you being there as this, you know, young, handsome, talented book. And I was like, I must say, I'm really nervous that I was an asshole.
No, you were by far, I would say, the best person in the office, Dave.
Unbelievable. Oh, what a result.
Wow. I arrived at the Hot Press ready to live the almost famous kind of dream of being a young music journalist.
We all did.
And rather swiftly began transcribing other interviews for people.
My other journalists
and just kept doing that for months, and then Dave was kind of gracious enough. I think he brought me for a pint at Dave Lane, and kind of was the first one to lay the lay the cards on the table that this is not Almost Famous.
I feel like you'd figured it out by that point. But yeah, I'm glad I gave you the arm around the shoulder, because I genuinely was like, gosh, you know, because I would have been going through a ton of, you know, angst and just the rage at my situation. So there's every chance I would have just taken it out on the new intern or something. So
no, not at all. I remember
God,
Yeezus had just come out at the time, and we discussed that on the first day, and it was good from there. Wow. No,
Kanye West always brings people together.
That's his going.
Well, look, that's a weight off my shoulders. Also, a weight off my shoulders, as I said to, I think I said it to you, Rob. I was like, I've seen this film, Lakelands, and I really liked it, which is a relief, because we'd planned this podcast ages ago. What if I was like, it's fucking terrible? Like, it's so, the music is awful. Like what would I have done? So no. I really, really like the film. We're going to talk about it later in the show. But as is tradition, you know, like, I mean, we're going to get into the news section. We're going to do that right now. So that sounds like this.
Start spreading the news.
So yes, that film is Lakelands, and we'll be talking about, I'm just going to keep saying it, you know. Go see the Absolutely. Film Lakelands. We'll be talking about it later on today. But the first thing we're going to talk about, guys, is Ed Sheeran has prompted some kind of weird 12 Angry Men scenario. Because, yeah, actually, you know what? The very first thing, before we get to Ed, right? I mentioned it in the Patreon post, the preview post of the episode. It's patreon.com/noencore. If you want to help support the show, I'd really appreciate it. More bonus content coming when I figure out more time to do that, by the way, I promise. Anyway, Dahi, this episode almost fell apart this week. Why? Why did this episode of the show almost fall apart? What were you doing?
Oh, yeah, the biggest news, top of the news.
It's kind of connected to the Ed Sheeran thing in a way.
I was on a jury this week. I don't know how much I can actually talk about it on air.
You probably can't, so I won't get into specifics. But just
safe to say, like, I got
to
picked
just
for
sorry,
a jury.
Just to jump in, it wasn't the Ed Sheeran plagiarism trial.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It was a local situation.
Yeah. And I definitely would have been excused from that jury because I'm a musician. But anyway,
essentially, you were like, yeah, that jury duty thing that we thought might happen has happened, and I don't know if I'll be available for the show. And I'm like, but what?
Yeah. And then when I got in, it was like, oh, we're picking like three juries out of these, like, however many people, and it was just like, oh my god, if I don't get picked for this one, I'm gonna miss the IFTAs for a start and like a whole pile of other stuff as well. And then so I got into that one, and the judge was like, oh well, it's gonna take maybe about like 2 or maybe 3 days, and the 3 days is like we would get into no encore time, but the case was wrapped up before that third day.
Ask you this in the pub, and I'll invite you to repeat yourself here. Just so the listeners can know, when you informed me of the possibility of you not being available for the show, how did I react?
You were basically like, I can't believe you've done this to me. That was basically what I said. Like, I was watching a poor man on the dock, and all Dave could think about was his podcast. That was it, you know?
In the dock. On the dock is different.
On the dock.
It's more rural, which is appropriate for the film Lakelands, which is set, of course, in rural Ireland, and we'll get there. But the point is, you've made it, and you know what else? Breaking news, Ed Sheeran has made it as well. He's won his plagiarism case.
Has he?
Yes.
Okay.
News actually just in as of this podcast recording.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, so you're saying this. So he was on trial because he was accused of ripping off Let's Get It On by Marvin Gaye. Now, the big kind of takeaway headline for me was he made a quip that he said if he didn't win, he would quit music.
Exactly. So the judge was like, oh my God, we have to.
And I was like, you know.
We can't not have Ed Sheeran in our lives.
And that's why I was like, if I was in the scenario, I would be juror number 8 in 12 Angry Men, swaying the room one by one to make the right call here. However, that's me being facetious and whatever. Dahi, why is this important? Because I've seen a lot of people say that if Ed Sheeran loses this trial, this is not good for musicians all over the world.
Well, like, I'm kind of obviously, because it's such a heavy kind of a law case, I'm not like 100% on all of the details, but generally it kind of means that like stuff like chord progressions could be kind of put into a situation where if you make a chord progression and some very popular song from back in the 70s, 80s or 90s had that same chord progression, then you would have to go to court or pay royalties for that song, which like would just completely, I mean, it would be like the jackals would just come in then and find every single song that has a chord structure similar to what another one, and basically kind of completely wipe out music as we know it before the AI does it. So like, you know, we only have a couple of years left here, so let's make some more music while we have that.
How are you feeling on the AI thing? It's something we've talked about on the show recently.
Yeah, it's pretty freaky. I think my positive kind of take on it would be hopefully that it will, I mean, there's been a problem in music for the last like almost like 20 years of this idea of people using nostalgia as the new genre. You know, we'll keep going back to the 80s and stuff like that instead of finding these new genres or these new type of things. And you would hope then that if the AI is mimicking and finding stuff that was popular in the past, that it might force humanity to make brand new genres, like back when hip hop was like recreated in this like new earth. So that's my like positive outlook on it. My non-positive outlook on it is basically, well, I have another positive outlook actually on it as well. Actually, I would like to think that eventually, if there is AI music, first of all, Spotify will completely remove any real artists, like 100%. They'll just have AI people playing on playlists forever. And then maybe we'll become like carpenters. You know, you'll get like, if you want to get like a handmade track, like made by a human, like it's going to be worth so much more than whatever AI stuff that you've been listening to since. You know?
Who else thought he meant actual carpenters and was celebrating the death of the musician itself? I was like, how is that positive? So alongside Patrick McGivney, Rob, you are the co-director, co-writer and co-producer of Lakelands, the film that we'll be talking about in depth later on. Dahi is, of course, the man behind the music on this film. But the question is, if Ed Sheeran swooped in at the last minute and said that he would write the score for your movie, would you have to fire Dahi and take Ed Sheeran, who is, of course, clearly the superior musician? I mean, like, this should be no contest, right?
Well, I mean, Ed's clearly got this Irish thing. He's very, very into.
Yeah, he's stealing my stick. Like, that's fucking awesome, yeah.
But, I think with the film, like, Dahi's material is just perfect. I think it's kind of this connection between, you know, we're both kind of, he's from the country as well, like myself, and I think there's that kind of connection between the, he's making youth related stuff as well, I think, as well.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of something that tied them together. But I mean, Ed, you know, he's got
that beautiful Ed.
And now he's under the Ed from this court case. I mean,
he's got
no baggage anymore, you know?
Well, actually, I reviewed his documentary, which is on Disney Plus, and it's 4 episodes long, half an hour episodes each. I watched it in one sitting the other day, and then I talked about it on the radio at length. And I must say, it's not bad.
Really?
It's quite well made.
Okay.
But this is what I was talking about, because it's like, they've time and access. Like I have time and access today to both of you. You know, Rob, you're in the middle of a press run for this film. Time and access, you know, depending on the level of status or whatever, it's even like, you know, with independent stuff, it's not always a guarantee. Like, so to get time and access with someone is what every journalist and broadcaster wants and needs. And in the case of an Ed Sheeran, who's so fucking untouchable, of course the documentary's good.
Yeah.
Disney paid a lot of money, had an incredible fucking camera crew follow him around for 2 years. Like, it would be a shock if you didn't get good material.
But he's an interesting, weird character as well, right?
Yeah,
like
the whole
setup, and even like these like massive arena tours where like his singular performance thing is such a small thing that's amplified into such a big level. And that's really kind of what his whole thing has been about for so long, you know?
Are you a fan of Ed Sheeran?
I actually found him kind of interesting. There's a recent article in The Guardian, which is actually with Aaron Dessner, which is like actually one of the most personal interviews Ed Sheeran's probably ever done, even though it's not by him.
Focused
like,
by him.
Like he really opens up about Ed a lot in it. It's
really,
actually really interesting. But I suppose the whole selling point, which I believe on last week's episode was a bugbear of yours, Dave, was that it is one of the most personal albums of his.
Of course.
But
we enjoyed that one, didn't we?
The press round has been actually a little bit interesting, though, because it's a little bit less just a generic kind of mega pop star kind of thing. It was going into his personal, actually going into it a bit. True Aaron Dessner, to be fair. But it's been interesting.
Well, to be fair, like it's a good point, because like the joke is kind of on me, because I found myself watching this documentary about his most personal album to date, and I actually was like, oh, I was kind of moved by it. Like, it actually, this does apply this time. There are actual reasons in his personal life which make it that way. Even if, like, you know, there's a part where he's singing the song Perfect, and I was watching it, and I was like, man, these lyrics are trash. I was like, this is just so saccharine and so cloying, and I can't believe it. And then the next sentence is him being like, that's the best song I've ever written. And I was like, what? No, it isn't. It's fucking Love Yourself, which he gave to Justin Bieber. That's the best song you've ever written, Ed. Anyway, look, I could talk about Ed Sheeran all day, but I won't do that. Have we heard the news that Matty Healy and Taylor Swift are apparently dating each other?
I did hear, yeah. The great Norma Howard told me.
The great Norma Howard.
Early in the morning, and I was just like,
did she wake you up?
She basically woke me up to say, did you hear that they're dating
now? Quick.
Yeah. And my initial reaction was it was a bit like Succession. I was just like, Matty Healy's like not a serious person. Like you're not going out with Matty Healy as like this long term thing. Like, and they're full on. They're saying that it's like, oh, this matches perfectly because they're both like huge mega pop stars and this like aligns. That has never worked in the entire history of music.
I'm sure there's a couple out there who've made it work. Beyonce and Jay-Z, not pop, but mega stars in music.
But even that, there was a lot.
And there's been no trouble in that marriage whatsoever.
Of course.
I'm going to read now, maybe in full, the several paragraphs I've downloaded from the Daily Mail on this one, because it's really big tabloid stuff. And again, I think Rob will appreciate this as someone who had to suffer through a lot of hot press copy for a while. So this is how the Daily Mail have sold it, right? Taylor Swift has reportedly moved on with another British heartthrob just weeks after her split from actor Joe Alwyn. That's a really good opening paragraph. If any journalists and students listening, you want to write for tabloids, it's all in there. Heartthrob is a good one. Heartthrob is a good one. Tell you one I love, right? Dave Higgins loves this as well. The phrase love rat. Where else do you
love
see
rat
it?
Love rat is good. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
fucking.
Yeah.
That is
good
one
band
that
name.
Has,
love rats.
The love rats, yeah.
I'm writing that one there.
But like love rat is great because it's managed to survive every era of tabloid journalism. It's the most 80s construct. And it's still used 50 years later, whatever the fuck it is. So the 33-year-old singer, that's always good, get some information in there with the age, is said to be, quote, madly in love with the 1975 frontman Matty Healy, 34, after their long-term friendship blossomed into romance. You guys can interrupt me at any point, by the way, throughout this.
No, we're sitting on the edge of our seats.
If you have anything to add. The duo, who first met in 2014, are now gearing up to go public with their romance during her concert in Nashville, Tennessee on Friday.
That's insane. Like, that's
reports
crazy.
The Sun.
So she's going to do a big reveal of the relationship on stage. Is that
boyfriend reveal? Like, you know, if Taylor, you know, she'll find a way. She did appear previously as a guest at the 975 shows in London, of course. Remember?
Yes, yeah. That's right.
So maybe there's something in it, you know, it could be.
They dated for a stint at some point.
Apparently, good use of stint. It's more sports. Stint is more sports. Like, yeah, you know,
they had a...
AC Milan.
Yeah, that works. And stint has negative connotations. Yeah. But you're on the right track, though.
Stint is good, yeah.
You're on the right track. Yeah, like I say, it's more a back page of the Daily Mail.
A dalliance.
Dalliance is too highbrow for the Daily Mail.
Too highbrow for what's going on here.
It's more like The Observer or something. Yeah. News of the new romance, so using the word romance twice in two paragraphs, that's pretty sloppy, comes just weeks after it emerged that Taylor split from her boyfriend of 6 years, Joe, 32, after the pair struggles with their career differences. Yet despite the short turnaround, Taylor is said to be madly in love, there's that quote again, with Matt, who is the son of Loose Women star Denise Welsh and Benidorm actor Tim Healy.
Yes, that's right.
So he's a Nepo baby.
He is a Nepo baby, yeah.
How do we feel about Nepo babies, guys?
I'm all for them.
Are you a Nepo baby? Because like you're... Like,
my grandfather is a concertina player, yeah. So if that probably doesn't
filters down. Nepo baby. You're a Nepo grandbaby.
A Nepo grandbaby. Nepo grandbaby.
Ireland's first Nepo grandbaby.
Oh, there's definitely been more.
Can we get that on the Lakelands poster? Yeah. Score composed
Score
by...
Score
quotes,
by.
Dave Hanratty underneath.
Dave Hanratty news of the world. The rumoured romance with Matt is the latest in a string of British boyfriends, not a stint. A string of British boyfriends for Taylor, who, as well as her last relationship with Joe, has dated Harry Styles, Calvin Harris, and Tom Hiddleston.
Okay.
So yeah. There you go. She's got a type.
She had British people.
English, yeah. Yes. An insider told the publication... Now, this is the best part. This is where we get to the completely made-up quote. She and Matty are madly in love. It's super early days, but it feels right. They first dated very briefly.
Says this source. Like, yeah. That is insane.
It first dated very briefly almost 10 years ago, but timings just didn't work out. The source went on to insist that there was no crossover in Taylor's love life, despite news of her split from Joe emerging last month, insisting that they actually broke up in February. Source adds, oh sorry, there's a great line here.
I love the insisting suggests that like
she
that's
did
not
cheat.
True. Yeah. Exactly.
No one cheated.
Yeah.
She's currently in the middle of the US leg of her Eras tour, while 975 are on their own tour. But the source insisted they have kept in constant communication by texting and FaceTiming.
Never done before.
It's crazy kids. Changing the communication game.
Real innovators.
The source added, as two international megastars, they understand the pressures of one another's jobs better than anyone and are incredibly supportive of their respective careers. They're both massively proud and excited about this relationship. And unlike Taylor's last one, which is very much kept out of the spotlight deliberately, she wants to, quote, own this romance and not hide it away. Taylor just wants to live her life and be happy. She's told pals that Matty is flying to Nashville over the weekend to support her on the next leg of her tour.
Oh my God.
Watch this space. As Zara Hedeman said on Twitter, the breakup album is going to be excruciating. So yeah.
On both sides.
On both sides.
Content mill, isn't it? Like there's
it feels so like that. Yeah. It feels really intensely like that.
A lot of content.
I wish them well. Sure, look.
They're very divisive figures. Have you encountered any live shows of these acts before, or do you have a Zara Hedeman-esque hatred for Matty Healy? Any kind of?
I've kind of mixed feelings on them. I have actually been on the list to see them live because I actually hear they're quite good live. But
It's generally quite a good show.
Yeah, I find them quite interesting to a point, and then I usually cross that point into annoying, and then. The cycle continues, yeah. You know? It's ongoing. But I do like that he's a bit more... I do often kind of bemoan that there's not enough people who are kind of being a bit more out there in terms of your rock stars and stuff and being eccentric weirdos. And it's good for this. It's good overall if there's more of that. But yeah.
It's good for the tabloid journalism mill. Yeah. Dahi has brought some vinyl to the studio today. In that he bought some vinyl for himself.
I thought you were going to give it away on the show. I was like, what are you doing?
1975's entire discography.
Yeah.
No, it's not that. But
rammed together with Taylor Swift's entire discography.
What did you buy? What's in your bag? We'll do that thing that they do.
I got DJ Koze's album.
What the hell is it called? Knock
Knock.
Knock
Knock, that's right, yeah. Which is an absolutely incredible album. A lot of really nice Roisin Murphy tracks on that. And then one of Dave's favourites, just to make him jealous, was... The Assassination of Jesse James's soundtrack.
Yeah, by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. Dahi did, in fact, bring this just to make me jealous.
It is. That's exactly why I did it. It's an excellent record.
There was a weird... I wonder where you stand on this, Adam. There was a weird debate in the pub where Dahi was taking the price tags off the vinyl because he thought it was gauche.
Yeah, it's like... It's the same as... if you give a gift to somebody, you take the price tag off.
That's understandable. I think it's fine. You weren't flashing your wealth around.
Sure. I know you're not flashing your... But it's more like... It's distracting from the music.
I don't think it is.
You would get distracted by the price of the record, and that would be the conversation instead of actually talking about the music.
The reason I mention this is because Fall Out Boy are changing the vinyl game.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. They're selling records packaged with, quote, real tears from the band.
So is it packaged with real tears, or is the vinyl record itself... like made with tears, like mixed into the wax?
Well, it's an edition of the new album, So Much for Stardust, and they're calling it Crinal.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I mean,
let's call it a spade. Let's call the vinyl a crinal. Yeah.
The idea is that the LPs are made with band members' tears inside the actual vinyl, and they retail for $100 American.
How limited is the run?
That's a great question. 50. It's only 50.
Okay. 50.
Yeah. They're probably sold. Oh, yeah, sorry. They have, in fact, sold out immediately.
So my issue with this would be that I would need to know before my purchase
who cried.
Not only who cried, but what they were crying about.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, there has to be some sort of intention with the tears, or else they just, like, put, like, teardrops in their eyes and then just dropped it into the vinyl.
Intention with the tears.
Without context, there is no value.
Exactly. There's no value in tears unless you know what the tears are about.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's fair. You make a good point. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, what if someone cried at Lakelands? You know, would you want to have someone in the cinema?
100%, I would love a jar of their tears. If I knew.
The score.
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely the score. If they knew.
The performances were okay, but that score.
But if I knew that they were crying because of the film, not because of some other reason.
It's a moving film, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's affecting.
But you would want, you need the context of what they were crying about, like. Like, you couldn't have somebody crying over something else and then go into the film.
What if someone cried over spilt milk?
I wouldn't buy that.
Okay. Why, just, like, get on
with
it? Because
I feel it's... I don't care. I don't care if they cry over spilt
milk. Jesus, tough
crowd. I care if they cry about Lakelands. But, yeah. Like, you need some sort of intention to the tears, and that would decide my sale.
Is that an emotion that you want to evoke from people, Rob? Do you want people walking out of that cinema on a Friday night bawling?
Yeah. I actually think...
There's moments.
I think it's not too sad of a tear. It's kind of a more bittersweet thing.
Yeah, it's not
which
beach,
I don't like, yeah. mind crying as much.
There's one particular moment in the film where the first time I saw like the first rough edits of the film, like I immediately got like really tearful.
Yeah, it got me a couple of times too. We'll get to that though. Yeah. We're going to wrap up now the news section by noting that Nick Cave has defended his decision to attend the royal crowning of King Charles III. Getting cancelled, so he is, for this. He basically said he's not a monarchist. He's free to do whatever he wants, and he doesn't support the monarchy. But he wants to go to the party, apparently, which is kind of weird. I see both sides of this. I see people being like, fuck Nick Cave, how dare he? And I see the idea of him just being like, it just sounds like a weird time and I kind of want to experience
it.
Yeah,
would you not want to be there for that moment in history?
Just to clarify, I'm no royalist myself. But I do think the timing of this is strange, though, because, Dahi, the last time you were on No Encore, you released your most recent record.
Yes.
Which, of course, you plug it. Come on.
For everyone the record?
Yes.
I'm Here Now, it's called.
It is. It's available at all good bookstores. So
yes, it is. Yeah.
Go listen. It's a great album. But you had your launch party on the day that the Queen died, which was a coincidence.
I did, actually, yeah, I did. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And now you're gearing up to release the score to this film around the time of the coronation.
Yeah, it's all intentional.
So that's weird. I thought that was really fucking weird. I was like, there must be a royal engagement every time you release.
It's weird that like people are so adamant that Nick Cave shouldn't go, even though like, you know, from Australia, like... It'd be weird if he was
colonized by the British,
like,
of course, you know.
Yeah,
but if I have that correctly.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is. Yeah. Yes. Of
I think
course.
He gave
it
a
is.
Very good response.
My history,
as I would expect Nick Cave to give in this situation, like.
Yeah, and he was getting very like, you know, aggressive.
He cut through the bullshit very quickly. He was just like, geez, if you were asked to go, why wouldn't you not go just for the crack to see it? How weird it is! Like, I saw that picture the other day of like the weird like the Stone of Destiny thing. Did you see that thing?
It's like Indiana Jones.
It's
shit,
so like. Weird. Like it's. So bizarre. So like, you know, I suppose if I wasn't Irish, I would probably, I'd be like, yeah, fuck it, I'd go see what it was like.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with this, which isn't me endorsing the royals. I just don't really care who goes. I wouldn't be like, get the fuck. I wouldn't do the Stephen Ray meme.
Would you go yourself, Dave, is the question.
For
if
work,
you got invited.
If I was covering it for work, which I'm not my field, but like...
If you got invited as
why
like
would
an
I
Irish
be,
dignitary.
But I'm not
the,
that.
The Nick Cave treatment level.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But I'm not, I haven't... Like, I can't envision a scenario where we like your show. Like,
that's as far as your imagination goes and then it just like drops off a cliff.
I have to be realistic about this kind of thing. Why am I getting invited to this insane event? Like, to give one quote from Nick here, he said, as for what the young Nick Cave would have thought, well, the young Nick Cave was, in all due respect to the young Nick Cave, young. And like many young people, mostly demented. So I'm a little cautious around using him as a benchmark for what I should or should not do. He was cute, though. I'll give him that. Deranged, but cute. So with all that in mind, I'm looking forward to going to the coronation. I think I'll wear a suit. Look, I don't give a fuck what he does. Like, it's fine. Like, I don't know why. Like, I do know why people are annoyed. Like, I'm not... Obviously, fuck the royal family, fuck the monarchy. It's all bullshit and they don't care about people and they are gauche scumbags who I have no time for. But it doesn't bother me that Nick Cave was going to just have a few glasses of champagne and like hopefully mock it, maybe write a song about it. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. People are like, he should be hanged. And it's like, really? Like this empathetic guy who, you know, like, just, who care? Like why? I don't know why people care about this so much. I just don't know. I just don't know, okay? I just don't know, Dahi. Stop.
It's a better question why
me.
He got invited. That's another question. Is like,
has he been honored? Is he an MBE or something, possibly?
Maybe.
He's been living in Britain for quite some time, so...
Yeah. Based in the UK?
He's based in Brighton,
I think that's the reason like, why they said he was invited was because it was just like, oh, well, they're like Australian people of note who live in...
I don't think he's not playing at it, right?
No, he isn't playing at it, no. He's
who
just
is? I had a fucking list of people. It's not a great lineup. There's been lots of like...
Katy Perry, I think, is playing.
Fuck's sake, why? And, why?
Somebody else.
There was talk of, you know, oh, Harry Styles. Yeah, Katy Perry, Lionel Richie, and Andrea Bocelli.
Okay, fair enough.
So
Andrea Bocelli is a good coronation act.
Sure, yeah. Adam?
I've done some very, very mild research. Nick Cave is an Officer of the Order of Australia.
Of Australia,
Of the Order of Australia.
So he's Nick Cave AO.
All right.
You know Ed Sheeran? Ed Sheeran's an MBE.
Is he?
Yeah. So he's most excellent member of the Order of the British Empire.
Dude.
Most excellent member. It's like some Wayne's World. Like, yeah.
Saying he held the
Bill and Ted.
Sword and there's a picture of it or something? Was there like a wacky picture of him holding like the coronation sword or something?
Ed Sheeran?
Yes.
Maybe.
I feel like that's a thing.
He wears a Cradle of Filth hoodie in the new documentary. So I was like, yeah, Ed, go for it.
Point.
Yeah,
is that what flipped you on the
one
whole,
point
the whole
to Ed? Yeah. Yes, it wasn't him talking
this guy.
About it. Wasn't
this guy's
him,
on my level?
It wasn't him talking about the death of his best friend and grief and me nodding along, being like, "That's actually really true, Ed. Oh, we're brothers now." It was the Cradle of Filth hoodie at the very end of the documentary that did it.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Right, listen, speaking of cinematic engagements, it's time to talk about the new motion picture, Lakelands, which my two wonderful guests were heavily involved in the fact that they created it. So we're going to hear the trailer now, so have a listen to that.
Do you remember anything about the attackers?
They're the same age as me, but could be anyone.
Round one, boys. Sure this is fair on you?
Consider yourself lucky. Some lads don't get the chance to come back from an injury like this. Stay away from the football till you're back to yourself.
Grand holiday for you. I'm telling you, lads, if I'd been there, it would have went down different.
Since when is Grace home?
Thought we'd lost you to the English.
You haven't changed a bit.
Can't have passengers this year. Need you leading by example.
Don't worry about me.
And don't give me reason to them.
People go away and then they think they're different to the people who stayed.
You've got such a chip on your shoulder against anyone that ever left.
If you hurt yourself again, it could result in permanent damage.
Did you get checked up?
They said it's fine.
You're not focused, Keane. You're all over the shop.
If you can't play football, it's not the end of the world.
Can't even look after my own farm anymore.
Take the rest of the day off. Go on.
You know, it knocks some sense into you.
The bullshit stops here, lad.
I'm being patient with you, but you're running on the road here.
A real asshole. Do you know that?
You can't always choose how long these things last. All you can do is make the most of them while they're there.
That is the highly emotional trailer for Lakelands. So, Rob, we'll start with you. How many times have you seen the trailer, heard the trailer, seen the film? Like, I have to wonder at this point of the film coming out, of course, now, as of the podcast being out, I can't imagine it's like watching a different, like, I assume it comes in very different fragments for you. And also, can you get sick of your own film? Like, is that fair to even ask?
Yeah, it's, we were estimating how many times we've probably seen it between the edit and stuff, and it was coming in at close to 200 at that point. And yeah, it gets a little bit rough after that many times.
Do you log it on Letterboxd 200 times?
5.0. But yeah, it's just, it, like, what's good about it, I suppose, is after you give it a sizable break, you can kind of enjoy it a little bit again. But like, when you're editing it and you're like, right, I guess we're plugging in for an hour 40 minutes one more time and just keep going through it, like, it gets really difficult to kind of see beyond it, like. But I guess just giving it that break, like, it can kind of, you can kind of, you'll never get the feeling of what it was before or judge it completely like a viewer would, but you can kind of see it, like, parts are working and that and what aren't working and stuff. So yeah, it's a gradual kind of, you get used to it.
It was cool hearing the trailer there, like, on Adam's gorgeous monitor speakers, and just hearing the kind of the sound design and just the emphasis, and even, like, you know, there's a scene where a character is physically attacked and just sounds huge, like everything sounds so crisp, and Doughy's music obviously weaved into the mix. We'll get to the music and how that even came to be, but can you give us some background on the film? I mean, like, it's about a GAA player who's kind of a fading star in his local town. It's set in the town that you're from, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is Granard?
Granard, Longford,
I was
going
to say Granard, and I was like, what am I doing? Granard in Longford. So you're looking to kind of showcase, because the character of Keane, played brilliantly by Aina Hardwick.
Yeah.
Tremendous performance. I mean, I found myself, as the film was going on, being like, it's not that I don't like this guy, but he's not, like, he's not always lovable, you know, and he's very fucking self-destructive in a way that a lot of young Irishmen can be, a lot of young men in general. What was the inspiration for putting this down on paper and putting it together?
Yeah, so it's definitely inspired by our hometown in Granard, and, like, probably a lot of our kind of circle growing up. Myself and my co-writer-director, Paddy, would have grown up in
playing GAA, like in Longford, you know, it's kind of one of those places where it's you're pretty much conscripted into it, like, and you don't really have much say in it, like, but like just huge amounts of positives to it, like, you know, it's great for like part of the community, it's great for building your friend groups and all the rest, but there's like a lot of negative parts to it as well, you know, there's a lot of pressure. People, you know, and then we were kind of using that as a jumping off point to look at like a lot of stuff, you know, young people deal with, like, and as you were alluding to there, like, I mean, the character, you know, he goes through a lot through the film, and I suppose we were conscious of, you know, not shying away from him doing potentially some unlikable stuff and like kind of pushing that line a little bit, because we wanted to try and get to that kind of interest and meaty material, I suppose, which is maybe a little beyond the line sometimes, but you got to, you know, in real life, you often see it often does go there. So we wanted to kind of go there with the film as well. And hopefully we don't go too far that you lose too much of the audience sympathy, but, you know, striking that balance, I suppose, between reality and kind of authenticity and that sympathy.
Yeah, I was really affected by the writing of the character and the performance, which I think is fantastic. Really, really excellent lead performance here by Aina Hardwick. Matched ably, brilliantly as well by Danielle Galligan, who is the co-lead of this film. We'll get to her, of course, but the character of Keane, I mean, I was watching the film and like I found myself being like, oh man, no, don't, like come on, like please don't do this. You know, which I think is, you know, I guess a good sign of being drawn into the character. I mean, I wonder what it's like working with an actor in that regard. I mean, like, it's your script. Is there ever any kind of room for the actor to say, well, I don't think Keane would do that. I don't know what Aina's like. I mean, like, how was it kind of crafting the character with him?
Yeah, it was brilliant, actually. He's a really collaborative actor. And we were lucky enough, we got a little grant from the Backstage Theatre in Longford to bring some of the actors down. So Aina came down for a couple of days and was essentially, he was being called acting research, but he was essentially just working Paddy's dad's farm for several days, just mucking out sheds and just general farm work. But it was a really important part of the process, because we'd bring him around all the kind of local spots where we would hung out as teenagers, and literally the place the film takes shot in is where we grew up in, and it's nearly happening place that were close to where real actions happened. So it was great to kind of immerse him in that, and then he would bring a lot of his own kind of ideas and stuff, and he's a really creative artist, and he brought so much to it, so much of his own personal stuff. And I think that can really, like, I think that's something that's kind of part of our process as well. It's we always have quite a tight script, but we're always open to kind of people bringing their own things in. And if it's not feeling natural, say it this way, or this sentiment behind it, opening it up to the point where it's a collaborative conversation. And then ultimately, I think you end up with actors having ownership of the roles in a little bit of a different way when you're directing and trying to shoot the thing in 17 days, or like, which is really tight, like. They know it so much. They know it so well. Like it's you're doing a lot less work with them, because it's already been done, I suppose, in a way.
Is like 17 days sounds quite breakneck.
It's insane. 17 yeah. days is absolutely crazy to make a film.
How much of that is down to rehearsals, like, and knowing every single fucking part of this, like.
Yeah, I think it was mostly getting the character work, because Aina and Danny. And Lorcan and Gary and all the David and all the supporting class are great, but the most workshop we did would have been with Aina and Danny, and they're amazing actors, and their backgrounds in theatre, so they're used to doing things perfect every time. So I think you're just getting it to a point where you're working on the character, and they feel comfortable with who the character is and how a character would exist and operate within a given situation. And from that, if your actors are like so good, it takes so much to work out of it. Like, I mean, you feel just blessed sometimes. You're just sitting there kind of watching different, you know, they might give you an option or two, but it's just all amazing. Like, and you could use most of it, like, really, like, but yeah, we were just blessed with having them two leads that were so strong.
Yeah, and it's good that you're not one of those, like, say it the way I wrote it. You know? Like, that is not what I had in mind. So, yeah, in this film, Keane, again, who's, like, clearly a fiercely talented a footballer, but he's distracted by, you know, kind of just going out and having fun with his mates, etc. The kind of early on in the film, he receives an assault from three lads on a drunken night out. And as a result, it turns out he has concussion and may have to retire. He, of course, is violently against this idea. I think the timing of this coming out is really interesting because concussion protocols in sports is something that is still filtering in a lot of places, even in the Premier League and football. Like it's kind of, you know, I guess in NFL in America, it's kind of come on a bit more there. But I think we're still very behind on this, and there's still a lot of people who oppose it. There's still, and I have to imagine, I don't know, I've never played the game, you have, but like, I have to imagine, maybe this is stereotypical of me, and if it is, I apologize, but I have to imagine that there's probably some kind of like, be a man, you know, about this kind of stuff, like, walk it off, like, don't, you know, and I think the film confronts that quite well, and there is definitely like pressure on him to ignore, a doctor tells him you can't play again, basically, and he's in denial, and people around him are obviously encouraging him to just get on with it. So, I mean, like, that kind of conversation is, like, we're probably not having the conversation enough right now. And I wonder, like, the film coming out at this moment, like, it feels especially relevant from my point of view, even watching it casually, in the writing of it and putting it together. Was that a message that you kind of wanted to get across, or...?
Yeah, big time. Like, we talked a lot of, like, it was very prevalent in our own club. A lot of people dealt with this when we were growing up. But we talked a lot of, like, sports people who dealt with this. You know, we talked a lot with Laurie Ryan, who's the captain of Clare Ladies, and she was a consultant on this, and she experienced this very firsthand, like, a couple of years ago. And there has been some inroads made in on it, but I still think it's not really where it probably needs to be, particularly in contact sports like this. And yeah, we just wanted to kind of shine light a bit on it. And I suppose it's interesting because it's an invisible injury, and particularly when there's, as you said, that kind of be a man attitude and like get on with it, which is really pervasive.
The stigma
in these,
of being seen as weak.
Yeah, know, absolutely. Like, and this is so pervasive. Like, I remember growing up with it, like, there would always be that, even if you're injured, like, whatever, your leg, it was always insinuate you weren't as sore as you were or hurt as you were, and just get on with it. Like, so that's kind of a pressure that weighs down on him through the film, and we wanted to use that as a part of a way to kind of get into the deeper questions, I suppose, of why those things are asked and why there's this expectation on young people to like perform this thing that's not necessary.
Yeah, I feel like people will be very receptive to that. I wonder if there might be an older guard that might reject it still, but obviously that's their problem, you know, and like, that is, like, you can't, not everyone's going to agree on that point of view, but I think it's a very real issue. But also very real, of course, is the music in this film, Dolly. We should talk about, it's weird because like, every time a character goes into a pub or a nightclub, like, Dolly's music is just playing. Did you know that you had such a following in Granard?
It was always a push. Yeah. But we were conscious of that as well, is that like, you know, there was like certain areas where you're kind of like, you're like, okay, it needs a specific type of music that will actually definitely work in this area that will definitely like happen or whatever. That was such a big thing. But even like, I mean, what Rob was saying there about like, you know, that kind of thing where there's like a pressure for everybody to kind of push on with somebody like that as well. Like a guy like that living in a village like that as well. Like the thing that struck me kind of the most when I first started writing the music for it was like this, just this idea that this dude's like entire like identity, you're completely built around like who you are when you play sport and the farm. And like that was such a huge thing for him. And like in one kind of foul shot, that whole thing gets taken away. And like, how do you like deal with that completely? It would be similar if like I lost music. Like that was basically the thing. It was just like, that was the only thing I could compare it to. It's like your entire identity as a person is completely taken away, and how do you like deal with that? And that was like a really big push when writing any of the melodies and how the thing felt, like, you know.
Well, let's take a look, listen rather, not a look, it's an audio medium, Dave. Let's take a listen to some of Dolly's music from the film Lakelands. Thank you. enjoying his work there as it played on those lovely speakers. That is from Lakelands. That is Dahi, of course. We'll get in. Well, I guess you can maybe give us some backstory on how you guys worked together in the first place. But I also want to know that, like, this as your first feature film score, Dahi, which of course has been nominated for an Irish Film and Television Award. The film has been multi-nominated for IFTAs, which take place this weekend. Best of luck, guys.
Thank you very much.
I want to know what the brief is like on this for you, and, you know, how much freedom you had, and what you kind of like, how you chose to go down this particular motif and musical road.
So myself and Rob and Paddy worked before on a short that they did before this, which is called Drifting, which was starring Paul Mescal. And with that one, it was quite interesting because, you know, like, it's also based in a kind of a small town, but the story feels very, very different because the character that Paul Mescal played was much more kind of arms flailing, like extremely off the handle kind of all the time. So like the music lent itself to be on a much more kind of heavier, dancier set, which I think is why Rob and Paddy probably came to me, because of that, like, kind of the rural Ireland aspect along with a lot of the kind of the dance stuff and everything. So then when they came to me with this film, it was just really, really different because the film itself is a much more methodical, much more kind of thoughtful kind of thing. And the main note that they gave me at the very start was that it just needed to be really stripped back, like that the music just needed to feel like it was kind of this thing that was very much in the background, that they didn't want to like use the music to kind of push on any emotion in this like really extreme way, you know, like it. And they were completely right. Like when you watch the film, like if there was this big emotive like string thing that like explodes at a certain point, it would just really ruin the vibe. Like you kind of have to kind of let the actors and the visual kind of do the work and have this music kind of build in behind it, you know. And then like from there, they were really, really good at kind of giving me a kind of a free rein to kind of try and find stuff. Generally for score work like this, what I would generally do is before like even a kind of a note of music is written, I would try and find what I would kind of refer to as a palette, which is basically like you try and find essentially the instruments that work really well in this situation. So I remember we were, I think it was between lockdowns or something like that, was it? Or and they came over to the house, and I kind of had like an Ableton file, a computer that was completely like just had like 7 or 8 different instruments kind of lined up that I could play on a keyboard or whatever. And then I was like, well, I think we should do this, or we can try this, we can try this. And we kind of landed on kind of 2 main kind of parts of the palette. And one of them was this kind of guitar sound, which is this like very clear, very simple acoustic guitar sound. It's not like a traditional Irish music type thing, but it has a quite like a rural feel to it. And that was kind of one of the main things, is this kind of thing where you can kind of create so much with just these singular kind of plucks. And then we also used like a sound that denoted the concussion, which was basically this deep, dark, lo-fi kind of synthesizer sound that like is breaking up loads and has all this weird kind of like stuff falling apart. And it's just, you're trying to find what a concussion would sound like inside somebody's head, which was really fun to do. And like then once we kind of agreed on those 2 parts, I mean, there was some extra little bits and pieces, but like that was the main thing. And it was such a freeing thing. It's like once we were all on the same page and knew what the palette was, it was so easy then to go in and kind of go like, okay, well, I can write the melodies of what's needed in those certain parts, knowing that we have these like touchstones, these anchors of each piece, you know, which is great.
And so I guess like working on that short film, going to this, there's obviously a level of trust here. So if you could, like, guys, let me know about that relationship, but also congratulations on discovering Paul Mescal. That's
you were right in
I
there.
Hope he sends you some Gladiator 2 money when that gets off the ground.
Be chasing him.
So yeah, how did you find like kind of going from short to feature with Dahi kind of based on, and also why did you want the music particularly, like why that note, like why strip everything back?
Yeah, I suppose so. On Drifting, as Dahi said, it's kind of a much more frantic kind of piece. The characters are all kind of early 20s and the whole thing is a little bit more full on. So we went with a lot more full on music for that. But with this, I guess it's kind of a quieter kind of meditative piece, really. The characters are all 6 or 7 years older and they're kind of all kind of at different parts of their lives. And just the style we were going for with it, the kind of references, the films we were looking at, were all kind of quite stripped back. And I'd heard like Dahi had done a lot of kind of work in that vein as well, that I'd heard in kind of short films as well. What Lakelands became was obviously quite different, but I was really interested to kind of work with him in that kind of more stripped back kind of format, I suppose. So, yeah, like it came together really, really. The relationship was really good and really quick. As I was saying, we clicked with what we wanted on it really, really early on it. And we were actually able to get in the same room this time, which is great because the last one was during proper full on.
I'd never met the two guys before the day that they came to my house. I think
we were like we were zooming, and we zooming. Didn't even have a. I think my girlfriend had the main room. I was in bed zooming to you.
I remember the camera being like up towards the roof and Rob's head like peeking over the thing.
Yeah, I'd love to do music.
So being able to be in the same room as well definitely shaves off a lot of time when you're looking at.
That's true.
You should have, but we agreed on the kind of what the general kind of key tools would be, the palette as he referred to it there, and from there it was quite a smooth process quite quickly. Like I think it was just kind of tweaks here and there really, and it was really streamlined, which was great because it was a fairly tight delivery time as well from when we shot it to premiering it, so it was amazing.
I mean it should be said as well that like Robin Paddy, like I mean it's a massive success story in terms of like making a film. Like it's making a film is just so incredibly hard and so insanely expensive and like just absolutely crazy, and like the fact that they've kind of made a film for the way that they made it, you know, I mean, I think you guys said it before that it's kind of the village had a lot to do with it kind of coming in underneath you as well. And a lot of people, you know, I mean, like, God, it's a lot of people's first film as well. You know, like I think the GOP's first feature film.
It looks fucking gorgeous.
And it looks gorgeous. Like, And it just really, I think everybody kind of came in under them kind of going like, okay, this is an amazing story. Like everybody kind of really stood up and kind of said, okay, I can really, really make this like the best it can possibly be. And it's really, really nice to be part of a team like that. Like you kind of get very proud about that kind of stuff as well, you know? So
let's have a listen to the soundtrack now.
So the first track that we played a while ago was A Place of My Own, which is based around Keane's kind of relationship with the bottom field. It's like he has a farm and like he has these like amazing moments where he's happiest when he's just like sitting in a field like with a cow, just like hanging out, like looking out over the river, like it's gorgeous.
Describing a very different film here.
Oh yeah, totally, yeah. And then the second one is Concussion, which is based around like the kind of the deep, dark, horrible feeling of a concussion as well. And then both those pieces are the versions that are put on this album, which is like a kind of an album version of the soundtrack, which I made afterwards and will be out on May 12th for your listening pleasure.
A week after this podcast drops, which is great. Mm. Fucking well done. Did you Google what does a concussion sound like? Like how deep did you go down this rabbit hole? Because that's a fascinating thing to have to try and find audio for.
No, like I looked up a kind of like how concussions work and like kind of small little pieces like that and kind of people who had concussions have described it on like YouTube and stuff like that, and this feeling of this kind of uncertain feeling of just not feeling yourself is like this really kind of recurring thing. And I think that's a really interesting part of the film as well, is that like Anna Hardwick does this amazing job of like after he gets hit, like he doesn't feel like a different person, but there's just something off with him all the time, and he's vulnerable, he's fragile, and he obviously is getting these like big crazy headaches and these flashes of pain and stuff, but even apart from that he's like unsettled and he's just like not on it and stuff like that, and that to me sounds like an idea where there's a sound that's being dragged apart and taken apart, and it doesn't really, it's not very clear and stuff. And to me, that's like this lo-fi cassette kind of feel and stuff. So that was like a very kind of a clear like image for me. And I think that one in particular, I remember like playing this instrument that I had built of this like lo-fi organy sound, and you were both immediately just kind of going like, that's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what we're trying to get as well. So like there is an immediate feeling of that as well. But yeah, and it's really, really fun to do. I mean, one of my favorite things about doing scores as opposed to writing kind of albums and stuff like that is that, you know, it is on the extreme end of every single little piece has to mean something so important, because you're working with so little. Do you know what I mean? Like an album, you could have like five or six elements or five or six different things happening at the same time. Whereas with a score, like it needs to be maybe two or three things that are happening, and those have to be like perfect. So it's like really, really, it feels great when you find like this sound that like really, really works for the thing you're trying to kind of convey, you know. It's great.
It's wild as well how like on a couple of tracks on the score, you do hear dialogue excerpts from the film. And Ian Hardwick and Danielle Galligan both sound lovely with your music. Like it works. It's like, it's a gorgeous kind of combination. And I think like it all just kind of comes together quite beautifully. I'm curious, Rob, you mentioned earlier on, like, you know, you had some reference points for this film. I'm curious as to what they are, if you're willing to share them, whether it's from a visual point of view, but also from a music point of view. Is there anything that you kind of wanted to, not obviously just emulate as a sound alike, but like, did anything inspire you when it came to the aesthetic of the film, both for the eyes and the ears?
Yeah. Visually, I suppose we were kind of looking at a lot of films that were kind of made around our budget that looked really, you would never notice the budget. So stuff like Andrew Haig's Weekend, stuff like Chloe Zhao's first two films, a lot of stuff like that, like Andre Arnold's kind of first couple of movies as well, that were kind of set in that kind of similar world, and kind of make a lot of, we're looking to kind of combo that kind of handheld up close claustrophobia with kind of the more kind of wide shots that are quite beautiful but can also be quite lonely at the same time. So those were kind of reference points. I suppose as well, stuff like the Chloe Zhao films in terms of sound as well. They were never too busy in terms of telling the audience how to feel or anything like that. But also kind of really lifted every scene they were in. So, but like we didn't want to, I think we had a really good trust of Dahi from the last film, and just his incredible body work he has. Like, so we weren't so worried about overburdening him with too many references.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can end up, I think it can end up over, you know, it's nice to be collaborative in that way, and have, you know, you don't want to end up having replicas of other things when it could be something original, and often that triggers something in yourself that is like, you know, that's why it's such a collaborative art form. What's so great about it is because it becomes greater through the people you work with. So that's what was such a pleasure about it.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I hate temp tracks because like it completely closes you down for like what people are expecting.
Did you get a version of the film with a temp track, or was it just...
No, so they gave me a completely silent version. Well, not a silent version, but a version with absolutely no music. And I'm really glad they did, because it's often the harder thing. And, you know, like, I mean, the more I work on kind of score stuff, the more I kind of realize that that's like what good direction is. It's like, you know, you might have like an idea of where you want something to go, but sometimes like the best directors will just like, they'll be able to pull something out of you. And that's like a really valuable thing to have in a director, where they kind of, they elevate you to a level, if you know what I mean, which is great, you know?
Yeah. So to go back to the film, like the performances, we've gushed over Anna Hardwick. It really is a great performance as Keane. Danny Galligan though, magnificent. She plays the character of Grace, who like it's implied that they had some kind of, you know, maybe a will they, won't they thing when they were younger. She comes back from London where she's working as a nurse. Her father is ill. And it's kind of the small town thing of, I guess, the one that got away for him and maybe for her as well. And they kind of resume a friendship around the time that he is getting more and more vulnerable. And I found their dynamic absolutely fascinating. I thought it was really, really beautiful. And the performances are just knockout. Like, I'm aware that, like, look, it's your film. You're not going to be like, not say a nice thing about them. But you must have been fucking delighted with what you got. Like, I mean, there's just no way around it, right?
Oh, big time. Like, as soon as the first weekend we had them down to Longford just to hang out, we were like, they had great chemistry. They'd actually done a play together years before. They were in the Lear Academy together, but years apart, like two or three years apart. But they knew of each other a little bit. But as soon as we got down, they were amazing. And I think we all kind of hung out a lot outside of it and kind of became friends there. And I think it kind of really helped the film as well, like they were good friends. We still are all our good mates and hang out often. Like, I think that was kind of great for kind of the comfortableness everyone had and directing them as well. But like, they're just amazing. Like, and the two of them are, they've got a load of stuff coming up now. Like, they've got a couple of really big roles. Aina's got a BBC show opposite Timothy Spall coming out in a few weeks. He's the lead. And Danny is everywhere at the moment. She's in Kin. Yeah, she's doing loads of Netflix show.
Yeah. Did she do like some Moon. Netflix show, some like YA thing, was it?
Yeah. She's on like she's in one of these Netflix shows that are like quite like teen based, yeah, or whatever. Like, so has this like huge following like underneath the thing, where if she mentions like the film or the music or anything, like you suddenly get all these followers underneath the thing.
So
it's
like
wild.
This is the thing. It's like, you know, if you and Patty get actors into your movies, they just shoot to superstars.
They're star makers. They're star makers.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? Like,
I mean, I need to get in as an extra at some point as well.
I think you're doing okay, Don. I think you're doing all right. I loved in the film. I love the contrasting relationships between Grace's father and Keane's father and with each other, because, like, you know, it's quite a combative thing with Keane and his dad, and they actually have a very lovely moment at the end of the film, no spoilers or nothing. Grace's situation is different. She's home to try and care for her father, and again, like, you know, not to keep bringing this back to me, but like, you know, regular listeners to the podcast will know I lost my father a year and a bit ago at this stage, and even like right now, I was just saying this to a friend last night. I was like, it feels fresh all over again, and I'm currently having a bad time with it. Like, it's just, I keep encountering, and even like the aforementioned of all things, the Ed Sheeran documentary, I keep encountering films and music and, you know, TV shows where grief will be a thing. And I keep hearing, you know, you're not the same person before or after certain events in your life and whatever. And just those complex relationships you have. And I think it's obviously a universal thing, but I do think it can be a very Irish thing. Just lots of stuff not said, and just the physical distance you can have between people. And I thought the actors captured all that quite wonderfully. And like, I watched this and I was very much like, I was hit by that, obviously, on a, you know, you could not relate to it on that level. But I thought it was handled with tremendous grace, actually, to name the character again. But like, that's got to be tough. And I think a lot of that probably comes from even some of the other actors. Like, Lorcan Cranach is fucking excellent in this.
He's so good. Yeah.
As Keane's father. Because again, like, I mean, I think there was times when I was like, oh, you know, like, it's a familiar thing, the angry father, but there's more to him, and the performance really underscores that. So how was it working with the kind of like the supporting actors in that regard to try and find that dynamic?
Yeah, it was amazing working with Lorcan. The big thing we talked about is that he does have the compassion for his son, but he just doesn't have the language to communicate it. Mm. So it's communicated through, you see it in the film, kind of, I suppose, like the little things he does, which is might be as small as making a meal for him or whatever, yeah, you know, like these kind of tells that were a little bit less like
or that stuff where he wants him to go places. He's just like, I'm gonna go bring these to the market, like, yeah, coming with me kind of thing, like, you know,
yeah, like little tells like that, because I suppose of that generation it is just a little bit I mean, I know not every one in that generation is the same, but it's very prevalent. Like, it can be quite difficult to communicate openly. So we wanted to kind of just show it through that kind of the little tells and stuff. And obviously, there's a bigger reveal as it goes on and a bigger moment. Like, but just to tread that through it. Then in terms of like the other actors, like they were great. Like, you know, Gary Lydon, he came fresh off the island to come to us. He was in
that's wild.
In Banshees across on the Aran Islands, and he travelled back to.
He's great in this.
Yeah,
as the coach of the football club, and again that kind of tough man archetype. But obviously, you can tell that he cares about Keane as a person. Like, he does. He doesn't want to see him fuck it up.
Yeah,
but he also maybe pushes him too hard. Like, it's that kind of contradiction. And yeah, he inhabited that perfectly. Like,
yeah, a big part of it was kind of looking at these kind of archetypes that can be considered 2Ds sometimes, and kind of chipping past that into that, like, next, because there's a real person behind everyone, like, in these small towns, and a lot of time they're written off by their kind of dominant traits, and we were kind of looking to get a little bit past that and go, well, everyone, you know, they have a deeper self than, you know, the most obvious thing. And even if they are hard asses who live given bollocks constantly, they have they have a soft side.
Yourself, a bit like yourself, you know.
But there are gorgeous moments like that. And I will say, like, again, not going into plot details necessarily, but like, there was towards the end, there was at least one moment where, I'm not going to lie to you, I actually was watching the film and I was like, please don't do what you might do here. And then it didn't, and I was like, thank God, because I was like, please avoid this cliche, I'm begging you. And you did, you subverted it, you wrong footed me like a swift footed GAA player, but I was terrified for a second.
I'm intrigued to hear what this
viewers have to go watch the film and guess what Dave is talking about.
And I do want to get across as well, I mean, like, you know, even like I was kind of saying earlier on, I was, you know, I was saying like Joaquin isn't the most likable, but like, he's human, and like, you know, the film is affecting, it's not depressing. I mean, I found myself very moved by it, and by the ending I kind of breathed like not a sigh of relief, but just like it felt very empathetic, and I thought it ended quite lovely. Like it has a really kind of nice landing to it. But again, there was a moment where I was like, oh God, don't ruin this. I was like, don't make that decision as a writer, and you didn't. So, but I think that was me in Hot Press, you know, putting in the right direction. But Lakelands is the film, of course. Before we wrap up talking about it, I do want to play another track if I can, just a bit of the track that plays over the end credits, if that's all right, because it's actually the only track on the album to feature a featured artist, and I want to kind of talk about how that came to be and what you wanted that to convey. So let's have a listen to that one, please.
Smoky days came and exhaled. Shaky ground had me pulling way. Trips around the states, I weren't keen to stay. But if peer pressure hears your name call, you don't have a say. And if the shades call, you don't say your name. And if them lights flash, then we taking chase. Go ahead and light that smoke until your brain. That's the tone of my home missile. Hopeful dreams of getting out of life alive. Unholy schemes utilized to try survive. Get out the dirt easy, nah, you'd be surprised. Cause when gold's in the soil, it's so hard to say goodbye. Once more to be a fool, walking school through the foggy dew. Don't know it all, flying blind.
So that's the last track on the score. It is the track that plays over the end credits of this film that you're all going to go and see. Lakelands, Select Cinemas, go see it. Strange Boy is the name of the featured artist on that track, Dahi. And when he pops up after all of the, you know, the kind of the score that gets in, it gets under your skin, you know, the kind of smoky pervasiveness of it in a good way. This fucking voice comes out of nowhere, and I was like, yeah. What? How did this collaboration come together? Was this always in the cards? What did you want to convey with it?
This is barely a collaboration from my end. It was actually Robin and Paddy actually pinpointed this track. I mean, it had been out for a while. It had been out for about a year or 2 years or whatever. But like the first verse has like a line on like, I want Keane to stay, and like the first like thing, I mean, I think it's a really interesting choice, because, you know, obviously Strange Boy is talking about Limerick City, extremely different area from where we're talking about here, but like there's an interesting kind of tie between like a kind of a young guy in the city's kind of experience and the person in Lakelands, you know, it's kind of got this weird thing, and then it also just sits so well in the rest of the score as well. So I remember when you guys kind of went like, this should be a thing, and I was like, holy God, that's so right, like it's like absolutely perfect. So yeah, great to have it on.
Yeah, like we were delighted to get it. Like big thanks to Strange Boy and Enda for coming on board the film. Like first time we heard it, it just really stuck out, and it had lyrics, there's just a lot of parallels within the lyrics. There's an emotional kind of comparison. It just felt like a nice fit. And I think musically, and I think he's doing something kind of quite unique there. That's kind of, you know, he's kind of mixing rap and trad there in a kind of interesting way. And like, I thought that was an interesting little parallel with the film, in that ours, it's a quite traditional film, but quite... it's very much set in the modern world, and there was kind of that little parallel as well, and with some of Dahi's music as well, there was that parallel. So I guess it just really felt like kind of the right the right kind of end, and we just were really keen to get the right end for the song that had that kind of bittersweet kind of feeling to it.
Oh yeah, not a dry eye in the house.
It's a hard thing to do, isn't it? Like the very last kind of thing and everything as well.
It works. It does though. Yeah. Like I mean, I found it jarring to begin with because again, it was like out of nowhere in a way.
And you know this track or whatever.
Yeah, but yeah. It all works. It's all of a piece, to use that phrase that I hate that every film podcast uses. It's all of a piece, but it is. It actually genuinely is, and it's a gorgeous film. It really, really is. So congratulations to Robert and of course Paddy as well. And to you, Doughy, as well. Oh, so congratulations to you both. Yeah, big fucking weekend. The film's out now, of course.
Film's out now, yeah.
You're going to the IFTAs.
Roll off onto the IFTAs for another bit of a bash.
I hope you win every award. I hope you win other people's awards that you're not nominated for. every category across the board. And I hope you make a show of yourself. I want to see, like, Monday morning, like... You know, just like put the IFTAs back on the map again from a crazy point of view. You know,
punch
somebody. You know,
We're gonna be the Matty Healy of the IFTAs. Is that what we're saying?
Run on stage, interrupt someone's acceptance speech. You know, just make it happen. So yeah, thank you both for coming in. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having us. Thanks so much.
So yeah, that's No Encore for this week, everybody. Something a bit different, but I encourage you highly to go and check out Lakelands wherever you can. Legally, of course, support this film. It is great, and I'm delighted that the guys came in. So go check it out. Don't miss it. It's Lakelands. It's out now, and the podcast will be back next week. Goodbye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.